It's important to understand that Amendment 2 was never about people. It was about conduct.
The court said, voters of Colorado, you may have adopted this, but it deprives a targeted group of people of basic constitutional rights, and that can't stand.
Because of this ruling, there will be no logical or reasonable explanation as to why pedophilia, bestiality, bigamy, and polygamy cannot be denied to anybody that claims it.
We're not trying to destroy American values. We want to uphold American values.
To This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Bermuda backtracks on court-ordered marriage equality, Indonesia's top court rejects criminalizing unwed sex, and Colorado cake case recalls Supreme Amendment two-step. Those stories and more this week because you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Michelle Yater.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending December 16, 2017. Bermuda lawmakers have made it the first country in the world to overturn court-ordered marriage equality. Voters in the U.S. state of California did that at the ballot box in November 2008 when they passed Proposition 8, which was trashed by the U.S. Supreme Court 4.5 years later. The Domestic Partnership Act, which has now passed both houses of Bermuda's legislature, overturned a May Supreme Court ruling that had opened marriage to same-gender couples. The measure instead offers those couples less than equal partnership status. The marriages of couples who've wed since the May ruling, however, including the marriage of the original plaintiffs, Winston Godwin and Greg DeRoche, will still be legal. The Progressive Labor Party, which took power in July, was responding to pressure from religious conservatives and their congregations, who harshly criticized the Supreme Court decision and held several demonstrations to protest it. In response to criticism from human rights groups, government officials pointed to the granting of legal status to same-gender couples via the domestic partnership provision.
The generally self-governing British Overseas Territory is located in the North Atlantic Ocean and has about 65,000 residents. The island, of course, is a popular travel destination and hosts up to 10 times that number of people every year. So the new law was vigorously opposed by the cruise ship industry. Many operators are registered in Bermuda and had already started booking wedding cruises for lesbian and gay couples. Because it's a British overseas territory, the law must still be given royal assent on behalf of the British monarch. In this case, that will be through Governor John Rankin. Royal assent of territorial laws is almost always a formality, but Rankin is feeling heat from some quarters who don't want such a regressive law to be signed on behalf of the Queen. It should also be noted that Bermuda's Supreme Court is not the highest judicial body in the country. That distinction goes to the Court of Appeal, although there's even an appeals process beyond that, avenues the opponents of marriage equality apparently decided not to take. A case filed by another same-gender couple could also begin working its way up the judicial ladder in Bermuda that could eventually lead to the new Domestic Partnership Act itself being overturned by court order. As we like to say around here, stay tuned!
Indonesia's top judicial body, its constitutional court, has rejected an effort to make sex outside of marriage punishable by up to 5 years in prison. Since lesbian and gay couples are not allowed to marry in the world's most populous Muslim nation, that would have outlawed same-gender sex altogether. The narrow 5-4 ruling turned down the petition of a conservative religious group, the Family Love Alliance, which had argued that Indonesia is being overrun by immorality. Because there are no specific laws in Indonesia criminalizing same-gender sex, the court ruled that accepting the petition would have required the creation of new statutes in the country's penal code, and that was the responsibility of lawmakers. Queer Indonesians have endured a wave of hostility in the past few years, stoked by inflammatory public statements from government officials and religious leaders. Police have frequently raided gay clubs and private parties, charging those arrested under Indonesia's broad anti-pornography laws. Andreas Harsono of Human Rights Watch said the ruling won't stop the reality of those routine raids. Just this week, 10 men, who were among some 140 people detained in the raid in May of a Jakarta sauna popular with gay men, were sentenced to 3 years in prison.
As we previously reported, gay and lesbian couples in Australia won't be able to walk down the aisle under the recently enacted marriage equality law until January 9th. The country's marriage statutes require a 30-day waiting period after any couple declares its intention to wed. However, a few same-gender couples have been granted special exemptions to marry sooner than that. 31-year-old Lauren Price and 29-year-old Amy Laker became Australia's first same-gender couple to legally wed on December 16th when they tied the knot in Sydney. They'd already planned a wedding ceremony at the British consulate before Aussie lawmakers opened marriage to same-gender couples, and Price's family, who live in the UK, would only be able to attend if the wedding took place this week. The couple was granted an exemption on financial grounds, citing the prohibitive travel costs of the close relatives.
53-year-old Cass Willow has been waiting 17 years for the right to marry her 56-year-old partner, Heather Richards. The pair are scheduled to wed on December 18th at the Peter MacCallum Cancer Center in Melbourne, where Willow has been receiving care for terminal breast cancer.
Another couple, 30-year-old Stephanie Dybal and 32-year-old Megan Stapleton, will marry in regional Victoria next week after they were also granted an exemption. The couple had booked their wedding for December 21st more than a year ago when they grew impatient for lawmakers to make it legal. Stapleton told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation,
"We got engaged in 2012, so quite a while ago, and we waited and waited and we got a bit tired of waiting and thought we're not going to wait around anymore for them to change the law. Let's just have a wedding and we can sort out the legals when they finally get round to it."
They expect more than 65 guests, some of whom are coming from overseas or out of state.
But a pair of unidentified lesbians in Perth could become the first same-gender couple in Australia to divorce. They married in 2015 at the consulate of an unidentified European country where marriage was legal. But things didn't work out. They discovered that it was extremely challenging to divorce because neither was a resident of that European country. But since the new Australian law also recognizes the marriages of same-gender couples legally performed elsewhere, their homeland now recognizes not only the couple's marriage at the consulate, but also their eligibility to file for divorce.
In other news, the U.S. Supreme Court decided on December 11th not to review the workplace discrimination case of a Georgia lesbian. The justices left in place a lower court ruling against Jamaica Evans, whose Lambda legal attorneys had argued that sexual orientation discrimination in the workplace violates Title VII of the landmark Civil Rights Act of 1964. Lower courts have been divided on the issue, making it likely that the Supreme Court will eventually hear a similar case. In April, a Chicago-based federal appeals court found that Title VII, which bans bias based on race, color, religion, national origin, and sex, does forbid workplace discrimination based on sexual orientation. The U.S. Equal Opportunity Commission, an independent federal agency charged with enforcing Title VII, has argued since the start of the second Obama administration in 2012 that bias against LGBT workers violates that statute. The Trump administration reversed that argument in a case before a New York federal appeals court in July, claiming that Title VII does not protect those workers. Legal analysts believe that the refusal of the justices to hear the Evans case was not a rejection of the merits of her case. They seemingly prefer to let other lawsuits involving LGBT workplace bias percolate for a bit longer in lower federal courts before taking on the issue.
And finally, in a special election this week to fill the seat of historically homophobic Senator Jeff Sessions, vacated when he took the Attorney General's job in the Trump administration, voters did what they haven't done in more than two decades and elected a Democrat. Doug Jones defeated far-right Republican Roy Moore by more than 20,000 votes. Moore has argued for the recriminalization of same-gender sex and was twice removed as the state's Supreme Court Chief Justice for thumbing his nose at federal law. The second time it was for telling state officials to ignore the marriage equality ruling of the U.S. Supreme Court. Moore claimed during the closing days of the campaign that opposition to his candidacy was being led by LGBT people. He should have been more concerned about African-American women who led the charge against him at the ballot box. And Doug Jones is, especially by Southern standards, a fairly progressive Democrat. The Advocate reported on December 16th that Jones, in fact, has an out-and-proud gay son named Carson. The senator-elect not only supports a woman's right to choose, but apparently transgender rights. Some evidence of that came in a video posted to YouTube in October, during which he condemned the Trump administration's withdrawal of Obama-era guidelines to protect transgender students, and also Trump's attempt to ban military service by qualified transgender enlistees. Moore, on the other hand, has refused to concede the election and chose to post a YouTube video of his own late this week with what some critics have called nothing more than a doomsday screed.
We are indeed in a struggle to preserve our republic, our civilization, and our religion. Abortion, sodomy, and materialism have taken the place of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We've redefined marriage and destroyed the basis of family, which is the building block of our country.
Hit the road, Jack. Don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending December 16th, 2017. Produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Michelle Yater.
There's been a lot of noise in the air this year. You might even call it sound and fury. You can help defeat the noise by joining This Way Out's year-end campaign at thiswayout.org.
Last time on This Way Out...
I'm here at the Supreme Court because I respectfully declined to create a custom cake that would celebrate a view of marriage in direct conflict with my faith's core teachings.
This is about freedom for LGBT people to live full lives in public and not in constant fear that they will be denied basic service just for who they are.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up.
Last week's U.S. Supreme Court hearings on the infamous Colorado wedding cake case brought to our minds the landmark 1996 Supreme Court ruling that first found gays, lesbians, and bisexuals worthy of equal protection under the Constitution. Colorado was ground zero back then, too, and there were some interesting political parallels. Similar to the push for so-called religious freedom legislation today was the conservatives' darling DOMA. The now-defunct Defense of Marriage Act was being debated in Congress and about to be signed by then-President Bill Clinton. In this flashback of our May 27, 1996 report, you'll even hear a reference to now-President Donald Trump's attorney Jay Sekulow, who had helped defend Colorado's right to discriminate. Here's how co-anchor Greg Gordon and I told the story that week.
For the first time in the history of the United States, the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that gay and lesbian Americans are entitled to equal protection under the law.
We got a good decision, folks. It's going to have an impact for many, many years to come, and we all made it possible here in Colorado.
In its most important ruling impacting lesbian-gay rights in the past decade, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down Colorado's Amendment 2. The voter-passed referendum, which prohibited statewide anti-discrimination protections for gays, lesbians, and bisexuals, attempted to amend the Colorado Constitution in order to overturn protections that had been passed in the cities of Denver, Boulder, and Aspen.
The first judicial shot against Amendment 2 was fired by Denver District Court Judge Jeffrey Bayless in January 1993, 2 months after 53% of Colorado voters passed the initiative.
Do the plaintiffs have a reasonable probability, given all of the law that the court has examined, of proving that Amendment 2 is unconstitutional beyond a reasonable doubt? Yes. The motions for preliminary injunction are granted. and the defendants, the governor of the state of Colorado and the attorney general of the state of Colorado, are enjoined from declaring Amendment 2 in force and are enjoined from enforcing Amendment 2 until further order of court.
Bayless eventually made the injunction permanent, and on appeal, the Colorado Supreme Court agreed that Amendment 2 violated the state constitution. Finally, on May 20th, 1996, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in the case entitled Romer v. Evans that the measure violated the U.S. Constitution.
Writing for the 6-3 majority, Reagan appointee Justice Anthony Kennedy said Amendment 2 was contrary to the U.S. Constitution's Equal Protection Clause because it limited the ability of gays, lesbians, and bisexuals to equally participate in the political process. In his 14-page ruling, Kennedy dismissed the state's argument that anti-discrimination protections gave gays, lesbians, and bisexuals special rights. He wrote that Amendment 2 unfairly identifies persons by a single trait and then denies them protection across the board, an act he called unprecedented in our jurisprudence. We must conclude that Amendment 2 classifies homosexuals not to further a proper legislative end, but to make them unequal to everyone else. This Colorado cannot do. A state cannot so deem a class of persons a stranger to its laws.
That rebuke was received with indignation by Colorado Attorney General Gail Norton, who argued in support of Amendment 2 before the Supreme Court.
The court's decision is insulting to the Colorado voter. It mocks the democratic process.
Boulder Attorney Gene Dubofsky, who argued the case against Amendment 2 before the court, had this response to the charge that the decision undermined the democratic process.
The court said, voters of Colorado, you may have adopted this, but it deprives a targeted group of people of basic constitutional rights, and that can't stand.
The court's three most conservative members, Antonin Scalia, Clarence Thomas, and Chief Justice William Rehnquist, issued a bitter dissenting opinion. Citing the last major Supreme Court ruling involving lesbian rights, the 1986 Bowers v. Hardwick decision, which upheld the state of Georgia's right to criminalize consensual adult homosexual sexual activity, Scalia wrote, "If it is rational to criminalize the conduct, surely it is rational to deny special favor and protection to those with a self-avowed tendency or desire to engage in the conduct. Amendment 2 is designed to prevent piecemeal deterioration of the sexual morality favored by a majority of Coloradans. Striking it down is an act not of judicial judgment, but of political will."
The court's decision in the case elicited predictably favorable response from the major U.S. lesbian-gay rights organizations, although most cautioned that the ruling does not guarantee gay and lesbian rights in America, but simply ensures that states cannot pass laws to deny them specific rights.
Lesbians and gay men are exactly where they were before, which is without protection.
The Lambda Legal Defense and Education Fund's Beatrice Dorn.
Essentially, where we are is we are free to seek, by legislative means, protections against the discrimination which we suffer.
Pacifica Radio's Verna Avery Brown asked the Human Rights Campaign's David Smith about the role of the Romer versus Evans decision in the broader gay and lesbian civil rights struggle.
Now, this ruling strikes down Colorado's ban on laws to protect homosexuals from discrimination in employment, housing, and public accommodations. Does it basically give them full protection as citizens, or is there an area that's not covered under this?
The important thing to understand with today's ruling is that gay people can still be fired in 41 states in the United States simply based on their sexual orientation with no legal recourse. Most people are shocked when they learn that. This court decision is a welcome decision in light of the congressional gay bashing that has taken place in the last couple of weeks. The anti-gay marriage bill that is introduced in Congress 2 weeks ago, and they had hearings on it last week, 2 years before any law will manifest in Hawaii that could actually make it possibly legal for gay people to get married, begs the question, don't they have anything better to do? The extreme right, which continues to attack gay people across the country, is shifting their tactics. They're setting their sights more on state legislative battles. They're dealing with the gay marriage issue. They are attacking us on different fronts. But it's important to understand this is a long-term struggle in the various arenas where we will be working. That's in the courts. That's in the Congress. That's in state legislatures. It's important that everybody stay involved and keep their eye on the prize.
That was the Human Rights Campaign's David Smith talking with Verna Avery Brown.
On the 700 Club, a regular TV program sponsored and hosted by the Christian Coalition's Pat Robertson, Jay Sekulow, chief counsel for the coalition's legal arm, the American Center for Law and Justice, said he hoped the black community realized that homosexuals have now been equated with racial minorities, which he said is not factually true.
Will Perkins, chair of Colorado for Family Values, which engineered the placement of Amendment 2 on the state ballot and campaigned for its passage, repeated the standard argument used to promote the measure.
You see, it's important to understand that Amendment 2 was never about people. It was about conduct. And to give a conduct that is considered to be reprehensible by the majority of people and put it into some kind of a preferred status, in my view, is an extremist action.
Today's decision could so deeply impact our entire culture that there may actually be an outcry from the people for Congress to impeach some of these Supreme Court justices.
Perkins said he's spoken with other groups around the U.S. that supported Amendment 2 and received what he called a lot of exciting interest in the impeachment idea. Boulder activist Rick Sendo said Perkins had taken the word sore loser to new heights, noting that impeachment requires evidence of a criminal act. He termed Perkins' statements extraordinary evidence of his and CFV's extremism in their fundamental hostility toward the American system of government.
Kevin Thibodeau, who founded Colorado for Family Values but left the organization earlier this year under a veil of suspicious accusations, also repeated the religious rights argument that protecting gays and lesbians from discrimination would open the floodgates to moral destruction.
What they have opened to this nation is anything goes. Because of this ruling, there will be no logical or reasonable explanation as to why pedophilia, why bestiality, why bigamy and polygamy cannot be denied to anybody that claims it.
But Evan Wolfson, director of the Lambda Legal Defense and Education Fund's Marriage Project, said the Supreme Court's Amendment 2 decision could favorably impact the current campaign for same-gender marriage. Wolfson pointed specifically to the court's conclusion that no legitimate government purpose was served by denying gays and lesbians equal protection, commenting that it was exactly the argument we are making against the radical proposal to create an unprecedented federal definition of marriage. Whatever Congress's power to run federal programs, there can be no legitimate or rational purpose in such a sweeping creation of a caste system in marriage. There are also four federal appeals court cases dealing with the issue of open gays and lesbians in the military, and Michelle Beneke of the Service Members Legal Defense Network described the Amendment 2 ruling as incredibly important to all gay and lesbian litigation. For the first time, gays and lesbians are recognized as citizens under the Constitution.
Supporters of lesbigay rights held open-air rallies across Colorado to celebrate the Supreme Court ruling. In Denver, an estimated 1,500 people rallied at the steps of the state capitol, where Richard Evans, the Denver city administrator who became the lead plaintiff in the case, did a cartwheel in front of the steps. One of the speakers, Rabbi Stephen Foster, said that the issue transcends queer rights. "I hope everybody here is not gay or lesbian," he told the crowd. "This issue goes way beyond the gay and lesbian community. But this decision only means that the law has not changed. This is not the time to extend the arm of friendship. This is still a war, and it has not been won."
But in Colorado Springs, home of Colorado for Family Values, the executive director of the anti-Amendment 2 group Ground Zero offered an olive branch to anti-gay groups. Frank Whitworth suggested that civilized discussions of the issues be held to avoid contentious rhetoric. "Our job is to let people in the community know who we really are," he said. "We are part of the community. We have always been part of the community, but for years we refused to admit who we are."
Colorado's Governor Roy Romer, who had urged defeat of Amendment 2 during the 1992 campaign and is the only governor to veto anti-same-gender marriage legislation this year, said he hoped for reconciliation among the battling partisans.
"Now, I know the issue of sexual orientation is one on which many disagree, but I make this appeal. Let's find out how we can live together with our differences rather than spend our time dividing over this issue."
Priscilla Inkpen, a Boulder County minister, says she was a bit surprised to be thinking about how the pro-Amendment 2 forces must be feeling, and also stressed the need for reconciliation.
But I really want to say that to the people who feel like they've lost today, that we're not trying to destroy the family. We're not trying to destroy American values. We want to uphold American values. We want to have families and be accepted by our families and be able to live in this society. And that's what this case has been about.
Colorado, Colorado. When the world leaves you shivering and the blizzard blows, when the snow flies and the night falls, there's a light in the window and a place called home. At the end.
Returning from that May 1996 flashback to the waning days of 2017, we've asked the Therapy Sisters to offer this seasonal greeting.
Happy whatever you're having. Hope that the season is bright. I wish that for you all your best dreams come true if they're politically correct. Cultural, gender-neutral, non-sectarian, unambiguous, ovo-lacto, vegetarian, nature-loving, sweet agrarian, non-polluting, mass-appealing, anti-looting, non-fur-wearing, all-inclusive celebration!
Unless, of course, you don't want to, because we don't want this to be a high-pressure situation. This is your holiday.
Happy whatever to you!
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. This week's program material came from John Dyer V and Michelle Yeader, produced by Steve Pride. Bob Marley, Judy Collins, and the Therapy Sisters performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our listener donors, for making this program possible, especially during our Defeat the Noise year-end campaign at thiswayout.org. Look for This Way Out Radio on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Google+. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Lucia Chappelle. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KYAQ Lincoln County, Oregon, for NAG Nippon, Queensland, WDIY Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now y'all stay tuned.